Okay, so one of the funnest, I know that isn't really a word, but one of the funnest books to come across my desk in a long time came across my desk, and now sitting across the desk is the book's author, Sarah Bamford Seidelman. And Sarah, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
It is lovely to be here.
The Book of Beasties, an A to Z guide for finding your spirit animal. The Book of Beasties is the point of the whole book. Tell us a little bit about the premise of the book, and then we'll do a semi-deep dive.
Yeah, well, the idea is that, you know, when we notice and observe the animals that are crossing our paths, in particular the wild animals, maybe they're coming to us in our dreams, maybe they're actually literally crossing our physical path, or maybe they're showing up as one of the, you know, one of the most important beasties to me early on showed up, like in a shop, in an item somebody hands you. But anyway, when we notice these, we begin to learn that they may have a message for us to help us, which when I stumbled into this idea, I thought that sounded kind of ridiculous. At the time, I was a physician on sabbatical, kind of confused about my vocation. I wasn't feeling good doing what I was doing anymore, and I was looking for guidance. And I didn't realize what was going to happen to me, but what would happen to me was that the beasties began to guide me.
So I'm sure that there are people here in Duluth, good Scandinavian grounded people.
Yes.
Who either do an eye roll or they give you that's a little woo-woo. And
right.
To them, I gather that you probably just smile and laugh and it seems from the book like you would smile and laugh and say, if it doesn't work for you, whatever.
Totally. I mean, I think this isn't, you know, is nothing in this kind of work is sort of experiential. So if you feel intrigued and want to play with it the way I did, almost 10 years ago, go for it and see what happens for you. See if the messages that you receive are powerful. But I'm definitely not here to preach or proselytize that you should all become beastie converts.
I guess that was one of my questions, too, is do you look at this as a tool to gain insight, perhaps a way in to get people doing some of this work about understanding themselves and supporting themselves? Or do you have a sense that it's connected to something bigger?
Well, I think you can approach it many ways. I mean, for me myself, I feel that it's connected to something much, much greater. But I also think it's powerful when people just look at it as, even observing wild animals just brings us to a place of presence. Because, you know, if you're watching hawks kettling up on Hawks Ridge up in the sky, you can't help but be present because they're present. You know, the hawk isn't worrying about who's coming to dinner for Christmas or panicked about what they said at the last cocktail party where, you know, after they've had a few too many pent paddles. The hawk is, you know, flying, and that's all it's doing. They're in the present moment. And so you can look at it that way, I think, too. And that's not an unpowerful way to work with this. But I find, as most people who stumble into this world of noticing what the animals have to say to us, that it definitely connects you deeper to the sacred fire of life, you know, whatever you want to call that. The Norwegians may have, you know, our Sami Norwegian, you know, those same stoic Norwegians we were speaking
right.
of. I mean, many of those people hail from the Sami people, you know, who really believe that all life was sacred and that we all have a position on the circle and that everybody is, you know, every beastie, every human has a special sacred medicine that they're here to share. And that's really what this is all about to me now.
One of the things that I've noticed in my work as a volunteer and as a person who is passionate about animals and enjoys photographing wild animals and volunteer my time for a variety of causes connected with animals, why is it so much easier to connect to things through animals than, for example, if you were to have written a book about, an A to Z guides of different kinds of people that you could connect with?
I think it's really just a primal thing. I think that there are very few humans. I mean, once in a while I'll meet somebody who says, I honestly don't like wild animals, but that's pretty rare. Most of us get pretty excited when we see, you know, a particular bird or we were just talking about how you saw a moose one day when you were, you know, years back and how that just thrilled you. And I think that seeing wild animals somehow connects us to that childlike state of wonder. that is so delightful and enchanting. And I think also just primal, like we're hardwired to see animals and to be inspired by them. It's just that many of us, like myself, you know, 10 years ago have, you know, kind of gotten into this very nature starved existence. You know, if we're working in a fluorescent lit office from dark, you know, dark, oh, dark 30 to, oh, you know, darkness in the winter, it can happen. Yeah.
Let me ask you, I was reading the book last night, and we're going to talk about this in just a moment. I'll talk about how you actually use the book, and talk about beasties that you particularly connect with. And I moved about three dogs off my lap so that I could read the book properly, and I thought, dogs, duh. You know, immediately went to D for dogs. No dogs there. You actually wrote a little section about, because of course our closest connection, many of us, to an animal in terms of if I'm looking for my spirit animal, well, yeah, Johnny Johnson. He's my miniature poodle with genetic dwarfism. He's my spirit dude, right? And
right.
In your book, you kind of went, maybe, maybe not.
Yeah, well, I think our dogs and our cats are just absolutely sacred companions. And, you know, many of my coaching clients, that's one of the things they do to align themselves with their highest vibe is to, like, spend time with their relaxing cat, you know, because the cats and the dogs have so much to teach us about, you know, how to be in the world and do it in a feel-good way. But the thing about dogs and cats is they are domesticated. So we are sort of, their choices are limited by what we let them go out, we let them stay in. You know, we decide to feed them, we decide not to. The thing about wild animals is that they are living, you know, completely free in their existence. And I think that is what, as humans, we're all longing to find a way to live our lives that feels completely free. Even if we do have obligations, even if we do have, we are somewhat domesticated, you know.
Somewhat, she said, making this scrunchy face. But I think there perhaps is a yearning to be known, and even if it's only to be known by ourselves, and to say, yes, I go through these motions and I pay the bills and I, you know, do this sort of thing, but there is this inside me that is authentic and that maybe other people don't know. But I know it, and I want to capitalize on that, perhaps.
Yes. And that's kind of a nice segue into, you know, discovering your core beastie, which is kind of the name that I've given to having this animal, this wild animal whose spirit sort of walks with you through your whole life.
So did you, now all of a sudden I had a flash. So when you were watching the first time or reading the first time Harry Potter and the Patronus showed up, did you go, yes!
I did not read about the Patronus. I'm sorry, I'm the wrong one to have a reference with that one.
Oh,
my kids,
Sarah,
were scared of Harry Potter. They're all highly sensitive. We had to stop most of those books early on in the reading.
Okay, we have to talk. But that's a conversation that can come later. So you identify a couple of different kinds of beasties in your book. And the way that you recommend that people or offer up to folks that they can use the book is to identify these couple of kinds of beasties. And what is the purpose in a person's life of a core beastie, as you say?
Yeah, so a core beastie is, again, this creature that's been with you throughout your whole lifetime. And when you begin to live your life in a way that honors that creature, maybe it's even and acting metaphorically in the way that they act. Maybe it's honoring them in different ways by protecting their habitat. There's many ways you can play with that. But when you do that, you will be guided, you will be protected, and above all, you will be empowered to do what you came here to do.
So it's a way of connecting to that, again, to that desire. Why am I here? What's the purpose?
Yes.
What's the deal?
Yes.
And then you mention another kind of beastie that may just show up. And you, of course, when you walked into the studio, you sat down. I didn't even offer you coffee. Because I bring my own. And I said, look at the beasties that I saw that came into my life just on my vacation. And for me, it was, I got the best pictures I've ever gotten of sandhill cranes and turkey vultures and great horned owl and these other a bunch of beasties that are right on in the book. And I was like, wow, where do I start?
Yeah, sometimes it can be overwhelming. Yeah, so the other kind of beastie, besides the core beastie, I like to call it guest beastie. So this is a beastie that comes for a few minutes, a few days, maybe 6 months, and it kind of repeatedly is showing up to teach you something about something that's going on in your immediate life. You know, not your whole life, but maybe you're going through a difficult divorce. Maybe something's going on with one of your kids that you're stressed about. And that beastie may be here to teach you a lesson and help you out with that problem. But it can be overwhelming once you start to pay attention. Sometimes you get into sort of what I call the Beasties Anonymous phase, where it's like you need a support group because you're like, I've got so many beasties, I don't know what I'm going to do. Which one is important? And I'll just say, you know, there's no wrong answer here. Just pick one, you know, pick one that is really calling to you or feels important and look it up in the book and see. You know, and if it's not listed in the book, which is unlikely because there's a lot in there, but if it's not listed in the book, just ask yourself, you know, if this is a kind universe, and that's always a good assumption to make, I think, or to pretend and act as if.
Act as if.
This is a kind universe, you know, what might this beastie be trying to show me with the way it's behaving, with what it's doing, you know, with it, who it is as you're watching it?
And you've got some insights, you know, some kind of guided insights into some different things about the beastie and some, not really affirmation, kind of affirmations that, you know,
yes,
people could use in connection with it. So it's basically, again, well, like any book, you get out of it what you bring to it. And if it resonates with you, though, it really is a way to kind of do, it's, you know, it's a lot of the work that you do with your therapist, but it's a lot cheaper and you can do it for longer than 50 minutes.
Yes, and I always like to say, like, it's easier to get a message from a beastie than it is to hear it from your spouse, to hear it from your, teenage kid or from your boss, you know? So why not be curious what they have to offer you?
Exactly. Exactly. Sarah, your book is delightful. Thank you so much for coming in this morning. What a treat to have you here.
Thank you, Lisa.
Sarah Bamford-Seidelman, the author of The Book of Beasties, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. Minnesota Reads on KUMD is supported in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.